This is Corolla Digital.
Thanks to you, the Adam Carolla Show has been going strong for 5 years and continues to grow because you share it with your friends, family, and coworkers. But now, the patent troll is suing me and threatening to shut down podcasting as we know it. Please visit fundanything.com/patent troll and donate to the Podcast Legal Defense Fund today. Your donation will help defeat the patent troll and keep podcasting free. Thank you and mahalo.
Did you know it took 39 versions to get the American flag just right? That's proof that great things get even better when they're reinvented. Valvoline's been reinventing motor oil since 1866. And with our all-American roots, we thought it was time to celebrate our legacy by giving away a free American flag. Available at AutoZone when you buy 5 quarts of Valvoline motor oil and a Fram oil filter starting at $22.99. See store for restrictions and details. Flag offer expires September 30th, 2014. Go to Valvoline-USA.com for more info.
Oh, we got a new sponsor. Love these guys. Cheapo Air. That's right. It's right in the title. Right now, throughout the month of June, you can win 50 tickets to travel around the U.S. with their absolute getaway. That's right. One person will win 50 tickets. Where you go, that's up to you and me. Just be up to you. I'm busy. You figure it out for yourself. Want to see mom in Florida or that lucky lady in New York? Even better, if you don't win, you can still save big bucks during checkout when you use the promo code Adam. So, you want to travel? You want to do it inexpensively? You want to support our show? Cheapo Air. Click the banner at the top of our homepage or head to cheapoair.com today. Don't forget the promo code Adam. That's cheapoair.com. Promo code Adam.
From Corolla One Studios in Glendale, California, this is the Adam Carolla Show. Adam's guest today, writer Steve Malenga and comedian Ian Edwards. With Allison Rosen on news and Paul Bryan on sound effects. And now, the best second story man in the business, Adam Carolla.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get it on. No choice but to get it on. Mandate. Get it on. Thank you so much for listening. Thanks for telling a friend. Thanks for supporting the sponsors. Thank you, thank you, thank you, everybody. We count on you. Good day, Allison Rose.
Hello, Adam Carolla.
And Paul Bryan.
I've seen a lot of balls.
A lot of people wanted more meemaws, that they said, with the hashtag top drop.
Boy. So when I was driving in this morning to go start work on the editing the movie, I saw one of Glendale's finest had somebody pulled over right by the shop, and then sat around in the shop. And then about 4 or 5 in the afternoon, I took off, and one of Glendale's finest had somebody else pulled over in the exact same spot. And then I just saw the officer go back to the four-way, which is really a three-way stop sign that's next to the shop, and perch their way there.
The one that's right up by the end of the street?
Yes. Oh, and our own Max Pata got a ticket there the other day. This is a picture of him in our parking lot, pulled over. Now, again, all we do is hide.
Trespassing?
It's actually in our parking lot. All we do is hide behind this fucking poncho of safety, but it's not safety. There's no issue. I'll ask you this. Let me just put a hypothetical out there. Has anyone that you know, including yourself or any celebrity or politician you're aware of, ever gotten to an accident, much less a major accident, at a four-way stop sign where they came to essentially a stop, like, for all intents and purposes, a stop, but their tires physically kept rolling just enough to say that the car did not lurch back on its rear suspension when it physically came to a 100% abrupt stop? Like, is there anyone you know who's in a fucking wheelchair right now? Because the story goes a little something like this. I was at a four-way stop. I pretty much came to a stop. I mean, I was under 1 mile an hour, but I was still physically, technically moving forward.
And I rolled into an old lady.
And I... No, you're in a wheelchair.
No, that's what I'm saying.
She's
that never, I'm saying that never happens.
Yeah,
Nothing bad ever happens from that.
Yeah, the old lady is, sorry, I had her in my mind, is a pedestrian. But, yes, I was T-boned then violently by what? Who? Like, when? Has this story ever happened in American history?
Well, no, because they stopped Chris Maxipata. Right. Thank God. Thank God they did.
Everybody has the story of my car was totaled by an illegal, and the guy had no insurance, and he was third DUI. That one we do have. That one most people have. We all have the DUI, hit, T-bone, car parked, destroyed, whatever. But the four-way stop sign, and again, this is 3.5 way, because no one comes the other direction. It's kind of a cul-de-sac street. I've been working here, doing business here, own this warehouse for 10 years. I've never seen two people out of their car at that intersection exchanging information, shaking their head, blinked in the... by the way, the auto insurance commercials where you just yell out, "Hey, Geico," and the person shows up, or your friendly Allstate insurance representative comes when you snap your fingers, or
like
when
a good neighbor,
yeah, like
with a hot tub,
yeah, and they show up at the place. I've never seen that guy with the clipboard. I've never seen the guy pushing the wheel with the skid marks underneath it.
No one congratulated me when I graduated college. My parents,
right?
Like the commercials.
I've never seen any activity there other than chicken shit tickets. When is enough going to be enough? Like, when are we going to say, hey, I was engaged in a behavior that was not dangerous? When are we going to be able to say to the people who made the laws, and the reason the laws were made were for safety and to protect us, that that was not the case? That none of those came into the discussion during this activity. Why are we getting... Here's my point. Why is our own police force kicking the shit out of us on technicalities?
It's rhetorical, right?
Yeah.
Why are the guys we're paying to protect us kicking the shit out of us on technicalities?
Because they want money?
Yes.
They need money.
They want money
to keep us safe.
To keep us safe. I would argue that you'd have a lot more officers freed up if they weren't all fucking parked at the four-way intersections writing out chicken shit tickets to guys like Maxipata who are fucking on their way to work.
Another thing, my friend who drives big rigs, he was driving through Glendale, and you need a permit to drive in Glendale with those trucks, and a cop pulled him over, and he says, I'm just rolling through. Can I just have a warning? And the cop replied, "Warnings don't pay my salary."
That's right, of course. And as they say,
at least he was honest.
There's no quotas except for not writing any tickets for a month and see how that goes over at the precinct. It's chicken shit. It's bullshit. They never stop. And I just say, fuck, enough is enough. So, Chris, are you going to fight this thing?
I don't know if I can, because I technically didn't stop. So I don't know what argument I have.
The argument all of us need to start making is, instead of the letter of the law, you prove to me why this was dangerous. I need to know a circumstance. Who did I put in jeopardy in this situation? There was nobody crossing the street. There was no cross traffic. There was nothing. So then you prove to me why this was dangerous. Because technically, there's a million things you cannot do technically while driving and otherwise. I mean, there are laws for everything that we're all technically breaking 18 laws a day by simply engaging in our life. I'm tired of that part.
I explained it to him when he pulled me over. He lit me up in the parking lot as I was pulling in, and I had no idea what was going on. And then when he told me it's because of the stop sign, I said, "Well, I don't think I did anything unsafe. Like I actually did slow down to a point where I almost stopped, except the car next to me started going from his stop, so I just went in tandem with
him." Well, that's the better part. The person that was at a complete stop, because it's a two-way lane, it's a two-lane highway, and there's two on, or four, it's two going each way. But that's the worst part. You come up to someone who's at a full stop and been at a full stop, and then as you're about to come to full stop, they start rolling, and you go, "Well, fuck it, I'm going through with this person," because they already completed the duty. They stopped. Meaning, why is it dangerous for you and safe for them if you guys are in tandem going through the same intersection and they came to full fucking stop?
Well, so how much did you, like, how slow were you going? And then we'll destroy this if you decide to fight it.
Oh, no, I don't know what my speed was coming into. I mean, it was just regular, like, whatever. I think it was like 30, 25 coming in. And then I slowed down to almost a stop. Like, probably if I had one more second, I would have just stopped.
No, but you did what anyone would have done. What anyone would have done, which is go through with that person. And also, I don't know how many fucking millions of dollars worth of gas we waste. And just basically, when you're scrubbing off energy, you're working the brake pads, you're working the rotors, you're working that entire system. It is so much more fuel efficient to do it the way you did it than come to a complete stop when it's completely unnecessary to come to a complete stop. I thought we were trying to conserve here in California. I thought we were trying to hyper mileage. I thought we were trying to, you know, make our gallons go further. You're a fucking hero.
Thank you.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, and when I try to explain it to him, too, he, like, oh, no, I don't think anything I did was unsafe. And he said, we still got to just go to complete stop.
Glendale, that was his argument. Glendale Burbank is such a fucking chicken shit ticket-riding machine. Everyone just has to fucking fight it. You have to fight it.
And then when I got here, Kalen went on a lunch run and saw that guy pull over another guy. And then when he on his way back, the guy had another guy pulled over, same spot. And while Kalen was driving by, he saw the cop signal with his hand to a guy who was at the stop sign pull over too. Like, he pulled the guy over with his hand, waving him over.
I saw a cop with someone pulled over on my way in, and the cop was wearing a Pharrell hat. Take note.
Oh,
gigantic,
yeah, I saw that guy.
Sombrero.
Yeah.
What?
Type of hat.
It was like a Mountie.
Pretty much. Like, it was like a Mountie hat, actually.
Yeah.
It was like an old-timey sheriff's cap.
Either way, everyone within the sound of my voice, please fight every ticket, clog the fucking system, and send the fucking message to these hero dicks. We're tired of you being fucking heroes. Go fucking kick in a door and yell no time for backup. Go fucking down to the docks and give a guy $20 and get some fucking information off him. Stop handing out chicken shit tickets to the people who aren't the criminals. We should be incensed and outraged by this. We really should be outraged, and we all just go like, oh. And the worst, you know what the worst part is? We internalize it. We go, I should have come to. No, you shouldn't have. It's your fucking street. It's your fucking car. There's nothing dangerous going on, and nobody's gotten a fucking accident at that intersection or any four-way stop intersection. Fuck you, fucking heroes. Fuck yourselves. Do what we fucking tell you to do. You're our bitch, bitches. Jesus fucking Christ.
When you go to court, Chris,
please.
This is the defense you use.
It's driving me fucking nuts. It's driving me nuts.
Exhibit A.
And what do they charge for this chicken shit?
I don't know.
I mean, it's going to have to be it'll be significant because it's going to need to send the message that safety comes first.
Yeah,
fuck you, cheap shit.
Digits, yeah.
Glendale, Burbank, maybe only Santa Monica. Trying to think in the chicken shit ticket pantheon.
No, they're duking it out. It's any so for people outside the area, LA is a gigantic city, but there's little mini cities of their own within the pockets of Los Angeles County that must give out tickets to pay for what LA City won't pay for, Glendale, Burbank, Santa Monica,
yes,
et cetera, et cetera. You'll find them duking it out for worst ticket givers.
Greatest moment of my adult life was driving through Santa Monica with my Audi that I'd been driving with for my leased Audi for 3 years with the license plates in the back and the cardboard dealer on the back plate. I just kept it going. I was driving down Wilshire and Santa Monica Boulevards coming at a motorcycle cop. He was coming my direction. He saw I had no front license plate. I watched him in my rearview mirror hook a U-turn. I love it when they do something dangerous and illegal to bust you on a motorcycle. Fucking hooking a U-turn in the middle of Wilshire Boulevard on a Kawasaki 900. Completely safe. But driving with no front license plate, that is fucking gone in 60 seconds material. You may as well be just jumping a fucking drawbridge at that point. Guy whipped around, saw my cardboard dealer plate, and thought the car was, you know, 10 minutes off the lot, and I hadn't got the metal plates in yet, but they were sitting in my fucking trunk, bitch. And he kept driving. Fucking dwarfs the birth of my kids. in terms of moments in my life. I just remember thinking, fuck you, you fucking assholes.
What are you talking about?
Fucking cops, Santa Monica. Go fuck yourself. By the way, next time you whip a U-A, I hope someone fucking clips you, you prick. Fuck you.
Bad enough to teach you a lesson, not to permanently.
Yeah, yeah. I don't want to be permanently disabled. But listen, when did we have to start fighting the cops? I really mean it. I have a fucking radar detector. I stare at it. That's all I do. I'm going to get in an accident because all I do is stare at my radar detector when I get on the freeway.
Personal dealer plate question. If somehow you got pulled over because your dealer plates were faded or for whatever reason they were able to assess the situation.
Yes.
And you have your license plates in your trunk. Do you get out of the ticket that they would give you?
No. Well, no. It depends. They you know, everybody put the cardboard dealer plates on your car. Do it, you know, three times a year. Get the good ones so they don't fade. And they usually leave you alone. Go ahead.
Yeah, I would say no because I've gotten a ticket for not putting my registration sticker on time, even though I already had it. I just didn't put it on right away. And so they gave me a ticket and they said I still had to pay it, even though, like, in the system, everywhere I was still a registered car and I had the sticker with me, but I was able to pay.
Fight the power, man. We need to have the march where we take the candle and put it through the paper plates.
Let's do it.
Try to claim our streets back. We'll all have pictures of our cars on our t-shirts where the car we're driving when we got pulled over.
Mm-hmm. Perfect.
Perfect. All right. Hulu, baby. Hulu Plus. Oh, you guys have tried Hulu on your computer. Well, now there's Hulu Plus. So much more. You can watch your current season of your favorite shows like Modern Family, Daily Show, Scandal. Every episode of shows like Nashville, Lost, Doctor Who? Doctor
Who?
Who? Try it again. Doctor
Who?
Yeah. Plus originals you can't get anywhere else. Check out the new show, Deadbeat.
Oh,
yeah, Deadbeat. That guy was he was on our show. What the hell is his name?
Who?
Yeah. Anyway, it's a comedy. It's about a pothead. Talks a ghost. Ad-free movies and... Ad-free movies. I looked down the screen. I thought I was going to get an answer. Ad-free movies and kid shows, too. That's right. Right now, you sign up for HuluPlus.com/Adam. Or you click the banner on my website, you get 2 weeks free. Full access, completely free. That's right. That's a whole extra week more with this special offer when you sign up at HuluPlus.com/Adam. That's HuluPlus.com/Adam. Tyler Labine. That's right. Canadian. Nice guy. Got the beard. Husky guy with the beard. All right. Let's see. More things to complain about. I got calls. All right, so I was telling you guys, I think that I was in New York over a month ago, and I was in a crazy media storm doing all the different shows and Stern and O'Reilly and everything in between.
Just for the book?
For the book. And at a certain point, I went across town to do an NPR show, the Brian Lehrer show, and we went in and did the show, and it was like, it was one of those, we got to hop in the town car, we got to go across town and into the building and do all the rigmarole and get in. And it was like, it took a good hour out of the day, and then we had a little break after that. Fonda Lehrer could probably shed a little more light on it. But as I recall, it was one of those, some of the stuff is, oh, these guys are in the same building. You know, Sirius and Sirius XM and Stern and then this guy, Opie and Anthony or whatever. They're all in the same building and Fox and whatever and Friends and O'Reilly. Like, they're in the same building. You get to kind of, oh, it's the building next door, the same building. But this was cross town building. And we went in there and I sat down with Brian Lehrer and started an interview. It was like one of those, you know, well, you say a lot of things in your book that we kind of disagree with. And I was like, yeah, well, you know, that's the deal. And
what are you going to do?
What are you going to do? And, you know, it's just crazy sort of righteous indignation when I'm like, yeah, I don't think you should be able to vote unless you have a current pay stub. You know, and he was like, getting, oh, well, how can you? And I was like, you know, hey, if you're not paying in, why should you be? You're canceling out my vote with your non-fucking tax-paying vote. And he's like getting all puffy about it. And then at a certain point, he played me this Joe Coy clip, although he didn't know it was a Joe Coy clip. He just sort of led into a, and here's a clip from one of your recent podcasts. Tell me your reaction to this. Anyway.
Korean faces much rounder.
Yes, but they're all much rounder. That's what I'm saying, Joe.
Are you having problems distinguishing between Asians?
Chinese, I got.
Lots of cameras.
Chinese, Japanese. It's Koreans are starting to throw me off a little bit now.
Koreans, yes.
Yes.
They're rounder face.
And stockier breed.
Yes. Heavier hands.
Pit bull.
Thicker feet.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Made to work.
Made to work.
Yes.
To labor.
I will build car for cheap.
They started with this part.
From Toyota.
Yes.
And there Sun. Is no racial bigotry here.
That's right. Oh, that's our clip. The clip was Joe Coy doing the thing, though. Didn't we have
When I listened to the clip, it moves on from there.
Oh, he doesn't do any. I thought it was Joe Coy doing a little more. I thought it was him doing a little more of his Chinese voice. All right, well, that's it. Either way.
So they just played the part.
They just kind of played the point. I don't recall because it was been over a month, but they just sort of played the guy doing the stereotypical Asian voice, whatever. And then the guy sort of came back and he said, well, what do you think of that? You know, and I was like, first off, I do 100 of these interviews. They don't play clips from my show, but I get what you're doing. And I said... And he said, now, don't you think that's disrespectful, you doing that stereotypical Asian voice? And I said, well, that wasn't me. That's Joe Coy, and he's Asian. And he said, in a super condescending way that I don't think he is aware of, he said, well, I guess that's better. Like, he was the sort of gatekeeper and the arbiter of what is funny and what is tasteful and what can be said and what can't be said and what is okay and what's not okay. He's the drawer of the line. And he'll tell me, the comedian, and Joe Coy, the comedian, when we've crossed the line and when it's okay for us to speak.
When you've offended Asian people.
Right, as a 52-year-old super white guy.
But did he look surprised when you said it was you?
The guy looked like Les Nessman from WKRP in Cincinnati, and he's going to you'll find the guy. He's going to explain to us when we've crossed the line in the Asian community. And I said, well, that wasn't me. And he said, like, okay, you know, better. And I said, I appreciate you trying to ambush me and all, but you guys really should have done your homework because that wasn't me doing the voice. So next time you plan one of these ambushes, there's Les Nessman. Oh, I can't think of the guy's name. Anyway.
Les Nessman.
Next time you plan one of these ambushes, do your homework a little bit better. Because, you know, you may have to fire an intern or something.
It's not that hard to find something where you really sound racist.
It's easy. So I said, it wasn't that contentious. It was just a little bit. Now we're looking at the guy. It was, they had a little bit of egg on their face. Or maybe it's not egg. I don't know what that was.
He's like Graham Wellington's hippie nephew.
Right. And he's going to be one of these guys that's going to be the hero to everyone who doesn't have a voice, except for how pompous is it that you've decided to be everyone's voice? That's the part that I find insane. So it was a 20-minute interview. We agreed on some things. We disagreed on other things. I explained my point, had a laugh. I did what I do. There's no bad 20-minute interviews with me, especially when I'm talking about material that's in my book that's fresh in my mind. And we did it. And there wasn't, you know, shook hands and left. And wasn't big blow up. And I didn't go, oh, this is bullshit. The only reason you called me in here was to ambush me, which is why they called me in, because they're NPR, and they wouldn't talk to somebody like me unless they had a plan. They wouldn't just, hey, let Adam Carolla come in and give him a fair shake. Let's see what he has to say. Maybe we agree on certain things. Maybe we disagree on certain things. And by the way, that's called good radio. When you say...
Lively debate.
Well, let's just put it to you this way. You go, LeBron James, best forward to ever put on the tennis shoes. I go,
totally overrated, bro.
And you go, Michael Jordan is. It's no good if I go, LeBron James, best player in the NBA's history.
Doesn't get any better.
All right, we'll go to commercial.
Coming up next.
Yeah, I mean, that's what it is. It's like you have it. That's what you want. So
next time you get on one of our butts for a yes and, I'm going to remind you of this.
No. What my thing is disagree as much as you want, but have a position. Don't just go like, I just feel like I disagree. You know, go, here's why. No, what you're going to need to do is explain to me that Michael Jordan has 5 rings.
Six, bro.
Right.
One for the thumb.
All right. And that he played with 103 fever and scored 42 points. Like, that's what I need. That's my thing. Or, yes, and. So. Wasn't any big deal. I mean, Matt, I walked out of there and I went, well, they tried to ambush me, but it didn't really work. But moving on to the next thing. And then the thing never played, and then it never played again, and then it never played again. And then over a month went by and it never played. And then I said to Matt, let's try to compare some apples to apples. Who's the last celebrity, author, whoever they had on there? And the answer was John Waters. And I said, when was he on? He was on Tuesday. When his book dropped? Same day. I said, okay, for me, it's been a month since I've done their interview, and they've not played my interview. So my book's been out for over a month, and I've not heard this interview. And part of it's just a time thing. It's me, Matt, and the publicist getting in a fucking town car, taking an hour out of our day and telling the guy to circle the block until we call him and come back down and blah, blah, blah. And I said to the publicist, I suspect I know why they didn't play it. They didn't play it because they tried to ambush me and they got burned. And I said to Matt 3 fucking weeks ago.
There's a point happening, by the way.
I said, they're not going to play it at all. Because if they play it in its entirety, then they're going to look stupid and they're going to look like hypocrites and they're going to look like what they are. If they play it and edit that part out, now we got a little Watergate situation going on. And thus, it'll magically just never get played. And we'll never hear anything from them. Yes?
Absolutely correct.
All right. What was the answer?
Well, first they told us that they were doing a pledge drive and that's why it hadn't been aired. And then eventually, I can read the official message if you'd like.
Allison,
I have it as well.
I said to our publicist, go contact them and find out why this thing has been sitting on their shelf for over a month.
And this was the response from your publicist. Basically, after telling me they were holding it until their pledge drive ended, they decided that they aren't going to air it.
Oh, no. First off, they lied. They didn't decide then. They just lied when they said,
like the pledge drive came out of nowhere.
Pledge drive. By the way, these are people. These are Bush lied. People died, people. This is, you don't lie to anybody. This is, truth is for all people. But they lied. Go ahead.
The EP knows it wasn't good radio, and the host knows it, too.
It was great radio. It was bad radio. It was bad for them because they tried to do something, and they got burned by it.
He was underprepared and said Adam is right that they did not do a good job.
As I yelled at Mike, Matt, overprepared. He did what no one else ever does. He went and got clips from my podcast and played them back to me. That's not underprepared. He overprepared and he fucked himself by overpreparing because he got the wrong clip.
You listening, Allison? Never prepare.
Never prepare.
Hope you learned your lesson.
Going wrong.
Disagree. Never prepare.
They can't fire you.
Those are the two messages.
It's who you know.
Yes.
But doesn't this part bring you any happiness? Adam is right.
Yes.
That's part of it. Mm-hmm. They said that.
I appreciate their candor, sort of. Yes. Look, this is somebody, all I'm saying is this. This is a group who says they never stop beating the drum of everyone's entitled to their opinion. Let your freak flag fly. Whatever you want to do, you do. That's up to you. I can't stifle free speech. I can't stifle whatever. If you want to march on this, if you want to identify, Matt, if you want to identify as a woman and use the woman's room, that's your business. This group is 110% behind you unless you disagree with them. Because if you disagree with them, you're getting stifled, bitch.
Boom.
We're never going to hear you. We're never going to play it. So it's say whatever you want, do whatever you want. Everyone should be able to do whatever they want, whenever they want, however they want to do it, as long as you agree with everything they say. And then it's fine. If you disagree with what they say, now you have to shut up. And moreover, we'll never play your words. It wasn't a big argument. It was like back and forth, but they got caught trying to do the kind of journalism that we talk about that's getting more and more popular now.
Gotcha journalism. Well, if you guys had just disagreed, but the host didn't come off looking bad, you think it probably would have still aired, right?
Yes, I said to him, I appreciate you trying to burn me this way. I mean, I appreciate you setting me up this way, but it's not working because that's not me. And I think that was embarrassing for him. Like I said, I understand you're trying to set me up, and it didn't work.
By the way, imagine the fight he probably got into with whoever found that clip afterwards, because I'm sure it wasn't him.
I'm just saying, speech is free, and let the truth set you free unless you disagree with them. And if you disagree with them, then you will be snuffed out and stifled. I find that somewhat hypocritical from a group that claims that this one of the planks in their platform is let everybody express themselves and no opinion is bad and every opinion is valid. And you couldn't even go on there and say, oh, fuck Al Qaeda. I don't trust those people. They go, well, now slow down. There's alternate viewpoints. There's alternate viewpoints to everything as long as you agree with them. And if you disagree with them, then you didn't get played. Now, I do appreciate the guys being cordial and, like, writing back and kind of going, we shit the bed. And they even said at the end, you know, if he wants to come back and do another thing. But it's like, come back and do it. First off, I'm not in New York. I came to your fucking studio in the middle of Manhattan on the 9th floor and came up and sat down and did a half-hour long-form interview with you guys that you'll never play. And the only reason you'll never play it is because you got burned doing what you try to do to people. It makes you look like, it doesn't make you look bad, it makes you look like what you are. It's not you looking bad, it's you looking like what you are. That's the part you don't want people to see. It's a fucking mirror. It's not a funhouse mirror. I just fucking hit it with my fucking truth of pledge. Or Windex. Sorry, I was on a roll. Anyway, now you have to shut up. Okay. Either way, what the fuck are we talking about here? I'm a fucking comedian who writes a comedy book, and I've come in to talk it up. What are we talking about here? Like, has this gotten to that point now? It's so fucking sad.
Well, that's what I asked you when after you came back from that press junket tour, essentially. You were saying that they kept asking you about the voter ID stuff. And I was wondering, why are they honing in on the politics of it? Is it because the book is named President Me?
Yeah. It. Look, everybody right and left, everyone, there's no one in the center anymore. Everyone has an agenda. And I understand that. But I don't know why. To me, somebody comes in here who wrote a book. Let's talk to them. Let's have a laugh. Let's attempt to be engaging and entertaining for the audience. If Brian's book, and you want to talk about Brian's book, we're going to talk about his brain tumor. But it's not all going to be brain tumor mm-hmm. talk. There's going to be family talk and laughs and tears and what have you. But I just mean, they didn't want me for anything and any reason other than to put me up as a sacrificial lamb to their audience. Instead, they could have had an opportunity to get to know me. They could have had an opportunity to have alternative viewpoints that people may have agreed with and went, oh, okay, I maybe has a point there. Or I understand that, or I never thought of it that way. Instead, it was just a pure focus on making me look like the, you know, just sort of evil heterosexual male that I am. That was just focused. It was just like, how can we make you look like
it's
a fucking ogre?
In any media platform that's super partisan, it's what a lot of people feel like happens to a liberal going on to Fox News.
Absolutely.
Like when you step into a situation where they have one point of view, if you don't share it, you're there to be exploited, essentially.
Well, I would argue when you step into Fox News or NPR, depending on what side of the aisle you're on, you're there to make your point. You know, when I go on to Huffington Post, they have a point of view, I have a point of view, and then we're there to make it. It's a pretty old format, you know. It's what has been going on for years. It's what the government does. There's the guys on this side of the aisle and the guys on that side of the aisle, and they disagree, and they hopefully agree on loving the country, and they argue, or they debate, and then we see who wins the debate. But what we don't do is not play the debate. That's what I'm saying.
Sadly, and maybe cynically, if their trap had sprung and they had caught you in some sort of embarrassing moment, how quickly would the interview have aired? Probably that day.
Yeah.
Well, when When, who would I say? John.
Bonham. Ritter.
Oh, Stewart. John Ritter. Yeah.
Where's Ritter?
No. I'm talking about John Waters. Sorry. When John Waters aired the day he did it. Because I'm guessing he did more yes-anding with them than I did.
It's odd.
Respect, yeah.
Yes. All right. Let's see. Our guest is here. And Steve Malenga.
How you doing there, Adam?
Good, Steve.
I have to tell you, I've had the pleasure of being on Brian's show, too, but they've aired my shows with him.
Well, you must agree more with him.
Maybe.
Yeah, I'm not calling him a bad guy. I'm just saying, understand, people, this is the time we're living in. You go on a show, they get caught trying to burn you, and then they don't have the courage to play it, and it's a group that never stops beating the truth is for all drum. But all right, they're fucking hypocrites. Go ahead. I'm sorry, Steve.
No, that's fine. I was just thinking, knowing the audience there, I think after they heard you, they maybe were afraid that if they played it, the audience heads would explode as they were listening to the radio.
I think that's great, right? Don't you want to play shit that makes your audience go, fuck that guy, or, oh my God, I've never heard of such a pompous ass? Like, I mean, I don't know. I don't find myself...
I go for every day.
I don't find myself... You know, it's sort of like... Jerry Springer didn't have a lot of well-mannered folks who stuck their pinky out when they drank their tea. They just get the guy represented the Klan, and he just like, all Jews are filthy, and they all got to die and show the black. And then everyone started booing and stuff, but it's like, that was good, right? That was like, what, did someone throw a chair? Like, that's...
Then you had good TV.
That's what you want, right? All right,
you
anyway.
You may be the first person I've ever heard of to compare Jerry Springer to NPR.
You're right. Sorry, Steve. What? by the way, Steve is calling in on behalf of the whole patent troll thing, I do believe. What is your title, Steve?
Well, I am a senior editor at City Journal, which published a piece about you in the personal audio. And
I found it scintillating.
I'm a senior fellow at the Manhattan Institute.
Yes, and what do you know about this patent trolling? Everyone keeps asking me, and I really realize I know less than the people that are not being sued, or many. Uh-oh.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry. Still there, Steve?
I'm here.
Yes. What do you know? What's your take on the whole situation?
Well, you know, first of all, I mean, a couple of things. As you know, the reform legislation died. A couple of weeks ago, even though we thought it was going to pass, we thought there was bipartisan support for it. And
what was the reason? What was the real reason it died?
Well, the main reason is this: is as you know, the reform legislation had a bunch of things in it that trial lawyers, not just patent lawyers, but trial lawyers in general, really hate, including one thing that scared the hell out of them, and that is loser pays.
Right.
And the thing is that. If there's one thing that trial lawyers do not want to see tried in America, even if it's just in patent court, it's loser pays. Because if people ever get a notion that that could actually work and get rid of frivolous lawsuits, it might spread everywhere else. And so
it spread to England, and it seems to.
Yeah, of course, but. You understand that lawyers are the second biggest givers politically in this country next to Wall Street, and they're the biggest givers to Harry Reid, and he was the one who basically spiked the legislation by saying this is not coming to the floor.
Hold on one second, Steve. Is anyone else wildly unsatisfied with this form of government?
It's totally corrupt.
Where it's like, hey, we got something to help. The citizens, except for the Trial Lawyers Association, is backing Harry Reid, and they shake their head and say no. And so he goes, no. But he doesn't really say no. They goes, it needs more investigation, and it's an ongoing blah, blah, blah. And meanwhile, we can all just suck it. Like, seems like I know there needs to be reform, except for the same guys who shook their head no to this one would shake their head to no reform, whatever. But... it's bordering on corruption, right? I mean,
it's on the other side of the border. Yeah.
Yes. Okay.
It is.
All right. Sorry, Steve.
Yeah, no, that's fine. And you know, I mean, basically, they also got a lot of cover from groups like the universities you know, who are kind of legitimate. But what's happening is, and this is the thing that worries me, is that the patent trolls are making this business very lucrative for other people, too, who are considered legitimate, like the universities. The universities are saying, well, we got to be careful about reform. And basically what the universities are doing is they have a lot of patents that nobody wants. You know, they're not really like commercial patents. But the patent trolls are now buying those things because they think maybe they can use them. And so suddenly the universities that are desperate for money are saying, well, we got to be careful that we, you know, we don't blow this whole thing up. And so, you know, if you looked at the press release that Senator Leahy put out, he was the one that was the head of the committee, you know, he said, well, this died because there were legitimate concerns from people like the universities. And that basically gives them cover to say these things. But the big problem is that patent trolls are making this business not only lucrative for themselves, but for people who have patents that they can't otherwise sell because they're not really commercially viable, but suddenly they can sell them to the patent trolls. And it's a problem, you know?
It's really difficult
to get reform.
No, I agree. Hold on a second, Steve. You know what it is? It's like one of those bills where it's some bullshit bill and it involves giving more pewter swizzle sticks to fat rich guys, but it also helps cops and firemen. And so you do this thing where it's like, you want to help the cops, you want to help the firemen. Thank God for the fucking universities, because the patent trolls and the trial lawyers get to hide behind the universities now. Yeah. Like, hey, you want to help what? Are you anti?
Higher education?
So you're anti-education then? Are you saying that? So, yeah, because the university sells their patents off. By the way, all you hear about is that everyone's tuition is quadrupled in the last 6 years. Why are they so strapped for cash? Like, I feel like they're not even... First off, the universities, half the people I talk to now are like, we're done late March. And then we come back after Christmas. Like, half the fucking people, I'm like, your summer, oh no, summer starts in April. Like, everyone is just leaving somewhere around the beginning of May and then coming back around middle of September. And I don't know what's good, but it's all 50 grand a year. What the fuck? Like, why are they so cash? And by the way, they're not strapped. When you look at some of these universities, especially, they're fucking billionaires. Why are they always strapped? Or they just say we have no money all the time.
Maybe Steve knows.
All right, I'm going to ask Steve. I mean, they do these things where they go, oh, we got a new chancellor. We're going to pay him 600 grand. We're going to pay for his move. We're going to pay for his new place. He's going to live in the chancellor's house. He gets 5 grand a month as a stipend for food and like entertainment. Like,
yeah, especially the private universities are sitting on fortunes.
Steve, why are all the fucking universities strapped when they're rolling in dough?
Well, because they were rolling in dough for so long, they're just totally unproductive. You got professors who teach two courses a semester. They're making $200,000 a
year.
Hold on,
those are heroes. You watch your mouth.
I'm sorry,
you watch your mouth, Steve.
They've spent a lot of money on amenities, because the whole thing is let's attract students by giving them incredible, like, dorms and things like that. So they've really sunk a lot of money into this stuff. And now suddenly people are starting to say, do you really need a four-year education? Do I need to put myself $100,000 in debt to graduate and get a job? And now they're worried.
Right. All right. So what do you think the upshot of this legislation reform will be?
Well, you know, I do think, first of all, we got an election this year, and depending upon the way the election goes, I mean, I think there are more Republicans who are willing to vote for this, and if there's some kind of a significant switch in Congress, then it could wind up on President Obama's desk, which would be very interesting then, because he said he would sign it. I would really be interested to see if he actually will sign it. He's been very, very supportive of it, even though Harry Reid basically just deep-sixed it. So it'd be very interesting to see what happens. But I think it depends upon which way Congress goes.
Well, I know everybody is, you know, Leahy's very supportive of it, too, except for he's not going to do shit.
Right.
Like, you've never seen people that are more supportive sit on their fucking hands and do nothing. It's really like you're pushing a car up the hill and they go, I really support your effort to push that car.
Yeah, right.
As they take another fucking hit off their daiquiri and sit back on their lawn chair. Thank you very much, Steve. Let me tell people the website, city-journal-dot.org. That is city-journal.org. org. And next time you're out in L.A., come out and say hi to us, Steve.
Definitely, definitely. Out there a couple of times a year.
Oh, shit, that much? All right, well, just the one time, though, okay?
Hey, next time you're in New York, come and say hello to us.
I'm going to go back to redo that interview next weekend, so. All right, thanks, Steve. All righty, then.
Good laugh.
Like a good laugher, right? Ian Edwards is waiting in the wings. I got to say, fucking wife, she's going to kill me. There's a pizza place. There's a pizza place at our, where we moved, and there's like a pizza place, and it's kind of ma and pa, and you just kind of fucking go, dear God, let this be a 6+.
You're talking about the first
pizza.
Time you order.
Yeah.
You mean it's not a roll of the dice. This is the first time you order, like, please let it be a good pizza place.
Well, she gets it for the kids, but I always want that slice too. They do that fucking thing. I don't get it. We got some good pizza out there, by the way, but it's not this place. The place by my house is the medium chewy dough. And it's like, first off, the whole carb thing, like, we all figured out the carbs are bad and it's making us all fat and bloated and all that kind of shit. But then secondly, you're making us fatter and hurting your product by 70%. Like the, and then fourthly, fifthly, and sixthly, the New York pizza. Don't we all just agree they have it? Like that's good. We all agree. Everyone
See,
loves
this
a slice.
This is their special thing. Subpar pizza.
It's, I understand thick crust pizza and I understand New York style, but the medium, like it's like 5/8 of an inch thick and chewy and doughy. It's like you are spending more on materials. I am getting fatter and your product sucks. Why can't you do thin crust?
It's like it has a stale, soggy breadstick going around.
Yes,
the edge.
Yes. Not and the center's sticking. Like the cheese to dough ratio is way off and it's chewy. And it's like, why? And then why open a pizza joint?
If you hate pizza.
I think you hate people.
Wait, and now why is Lynette going to be so mad at you for saying this?
Because what happens is she brings it back from the kids' party, and then I do the, what do we got? And then I take a bite, and I do the, you know, hands to the heaven, like, why? And then she does the, why? And then I go, why? And she goes, why do you have to complain about everything? And I'm like, why can't they just fucking make thin pizza dough? Listen, I didn't invent anything. I just been to New York twice, and the fucking pizza's good. Let's fucking do it that way, you idiots. But it's just, what drives me nuts is the lose. Like, I'm perfectly fine with the explanation when I say to somebody, why doesn't this have a that? And they go, it costs an extra, you know, 10% per unit times X amount of units a year. That adds up. I go, fine. I get it. I don't like it. I get it. This is more flour, more yeast and more water and like more of everything. It's heavier for the guy who delivers it and it tastes like shit. It makes you fat. Other than that, fucking winner. Chicken dinner. All right. Get ready for some Baldywood. We'll do that in a second. Valvoline, baby. Can't complain about Valvoline. Love me some Valvoline. Took 39 different versions of the American flag before we got it right. Well, Valvoline, they got a little flag to give you, and I'll tell you about that in a second. They've been reinventing motor oil since they were introduced in 1866. That's right. They've been around for a long time. As the only American-owned motor oil company, they're celebrating big time. They get a free American flag when you buy 5 quarts of Valvoline motor oil at a participating retailer. So you can salute the stars and stripes, put your hand on your heart, put your foot through the floor, baby. Pedal to the metal. Metal to the pedal. Pedal to the metal. Valvoline, 140 years under the hood. Go to Valvoline-USA.com for more information. That's Valvoline-USA.com. All right. Ian Edwards is out there. We're going to bring him in 1 second. Let's do a little Baldywood real quick. Like.
Baldywood. He will tell you if a movie's good. Brian will review the flicks that he's seen up on the big screen or in his Netflix queue.
Before you spend bucks, remember his taste sucks. He loved that train wreck piece of shit, Transformers 2. Hooray for Bollywood.
Edge of Tomorrow.
Edge of Tomorrow.
It's in theaters now. Have you guys seen this yet?
Nope.
No, I know I say this every time, but it feels like the last six movies Tom Cruise have made have been the same movie.
Yeah.
Like, you, I know you from another life. You died 100 years ago. I got to come back. We're falling in love. Like, it's supposed to be good, but I don't think people are responding to it because it just seems like the same confusing mess that everything has been.
He's been coasting a little bit, I think. Did you see Jack Reacher?
No, I heard that was pretty
all right.
Good.
It was pretty good, and Mission Impossible 4 or whatever it was, pretty good, and the last one, Oblivion, pretty good. I mean, but you're right. No one's being blown away by these movies.
But don't you think it's so much, and I know we're getting away from this, but that thing where it's like, it's the future, he's dead, but he's not living in the present. He's living in the past, so he's still alive. And then he falls in love with Emily Blunt, who's living in a telephone booth in the future, but she doesn't know, but she knows something about him. But if they can come together, they can both live forever in the past. And it's like, or he could just play a stock car driver or a fighter jockey, and we could just fucking wrap our minds around that. Like it's like, hey, there's Tom Cruise. Oh, he's being launched from a carrier deck. Oh, there's a guy flying a MiG. Let him shoot it down. Like, oh, get it. Oh, there's him driving a Winston Cup car. Got it. Like, don't we need more of that rather than this?
I would say the one with Emily Blunt in the phone booth. That sounds like a pretty good description of a movie.
Mm-hmm.
I wondered if that actually is a real plot of a movie. That's how much I haven't seen his movies.
This one, Edge of Tomorrow, was directed by Doug Liman, director of Swingers, director of Go, The Bourne Identity, Mr. and Mrs. Smith. A pretty spotless resume, except for this one movie called Jumper. It came out about, I don't know, 8 years ago. Just a piece of garbage.
But another time traveling.
That was a guy who could jump from one, like, teleport from one place to another.
Oh, right.
Forgot who it was, Hayden Christensen. Anyway, it was a pretty crappy movie. But other than that, he does good movies, man. I love Doug Liman's movies. And this one's with Tom Cruise, the aforementioned Emily Blunt, Brendan Gleeson, Noah Taylor, and Bill Paxton's in this. He's great. Love Bill Paxton. He's great in this. So this is high concept. This is Tom Cruise, plays a soldier in the near future. There's an alien war, and he wakes up to relive the same day over and over again each time he dies in battle. So it's, you know, Groundhog Day meets Starship Troopers. I mean, that's how they pitched it, I'm sure, and that's how it was sold.
But again, fighter jock, NASCAR driver, super easy, right? Just, it's Tom Cruise, and then it's super easy because he gets in a crash, he loses his confidence, he has that scene somewhere toward the end of Act 3 when he goes, "I don't believe in me anymore!" When it's pit crew's telling him to get back in the car. You know that scene?
But they believe in him enough.
But they believe in him enough for him to believe in himself, even though he stopped believing in him. And they explain that even though you don't believe in you, they all believe in him. That's right.
I like that there's the alien wars. That's just in the background of this movie, right?
It's happening. Well, I mean, that's the plot.
When did these fucking aliens get a publicist? Because 4 years ago, aliens like got a publicist, and they're like, we are fucking back in a huge way. Like, we're around pretty good in the 50s. Then we kind of took a few decades off. Then it was like here and there. But it is every fucking movie now is the aliens have come.
It's a guerrilla marketing campaign.
Right.
They don't just have triangle heads anymore. Oh, no.
Right.
That's yesterday's alien.
They'll work for scale. They'll be in any movie.
So, but it's doing well on Rotten Tomatoes and stuff, right?
89% last I checked.
Did you say 89?
89% last I checked. So this has a little bit of, like I said, Starship Troopers, aliens. There are a lot of aliens. The movie Aliens is in this movie. The Matrix has a lot of that. And, of course, Groundhog Day. Now, for me, I rate almost every movie I've seen on Netflix. It lets you rate the movies so you can keep track. And I've rated almost every movie I've ever seen. Those are all 5-star movies for me. Those are great, great movies. The Matrix, Aliens, Starship Troopers, Groundhog Day. I love all those movies.
Mm-hmm.
This is like a perfectly made gumbo. And you could cynically say, well, it's just chicken and sausage and shrimp. Yeah, those things are fucking delicious.
When done right, yes.
This is done right. This is a great movie. I loved it.
So the reason it, you know, kind of bombed at the box office is
Tom Cruise fatigue?
Here's what I think. I think when you have an exposure. I'll give you an example. If you're trying to pitch a game show and you just have a fucking killer idea for a game show, when you sit down and start pitching it, you have about 17 seconds to really get it, to have the people on the other side of the mahogany table get it. And if they don't, they're fucking out. Now, somewhere around minute 9, when it really kicks into gear, they're already long gone. They're fucking off.
Checking their Blackberries.
That song Kokomo is playing in a fucking loop in their brain, all right?
From a Tom Cruise movie.
Well, when you see the commercial and it's like, well, I know you. You're from my past and you're living every day and the alien and explosion, you just go, I'm not in the mood.
Edge of Tomorrow is not a good title.
Yes, I'm not in the mood. I don't feel like working at the theater to try to figure out whether, again, fighter jock, NASCAR racer, done. So you have this little window to pitch your movie, and you pitch it, and it's like the chick dragging around the oxygen tank, and the guy, you know, crying his eyes out.
The Fault in Our Stars?
It's, there it is. Boom. She's stricken. He loves her, even though her hair's falling out. We got it. There's no, we knew you from a past life, but we're living this day like it's every day, and we got to get back to the future, which is in the past. Like, it's just head wrapped around.
The action in this movie is perfect. It's legitimately funny, and laugh out loud funny, if the audience I saw with is any indication. There were some laughs. There's one recurring joke they keep going to that's funny every time. It went through several rewrites, and there's three writers credited, including, well, which is usually a bad sign, but one of them is Christopher McQuarrie, who wrote The Usual Suspects, which is another five-star movie, at least for me. I love that movie. So it all came together for some reason. It had everything going against it. Tom Cruise is kind of plateaued a little bit. The writers, this and that, the concept, but it comes together. I thought this was a great summer action movie. I loved it. I encourage you all to see it.
All right. There you go. And like I said, I heard it's good. It's just completely tanked. And like I said, when we're confused, I've said a million times, like, sort of creatively, the worst thing you can do is confuse somebody, which is you see a movie and you're laughing and you think, oh, I love this. Or you see, it's like Adam Sandler makes shitty movies, but he doesn't confuse anybody. Mm. Oh, he's riding an ostrich and the old lady's upset, you know, like it's like you see. You think
you're so right. And I hate that message.
I know.
Be exactly what people expect you to be.
Mm.
Yes, you see, look, that's why there's 7,000 Applebee's. It's like, that's what they are.
Yeah, people want consistency.
That's why, listen, Adam Sandler's made, $3.7 billion in the last 15 years. Like, his fucking things are, if he's a golfer, he's beating a guy with a golf club in the first 4 seconds of the commercial. We got it. Boom. Like, think about every Sandler thing. It's like, oh, there's his obnoxious sister, but it's really him. But boom. Right in your fucking face. It's exactly what it is. It's like when Subway does a commercial, it's like, pow, sandwich, face, boom. And that's what we do. But when you see The Edge of Tomorrow, the title means nothing. You see the first 20 seconds and you go, I don't know what's going on.
Not a good title.
And you're completely tuned out.
I thought of you, however, during the movie, because early on, Tom Cruise keeps dying at the same part of the battle. You just can't get out of this early part of the battle. It reminded me of the one time you tried to play the video game where you couldn't get out of your bunk and you couldn't fight the zeros.
I talk more about it, except for my class action lawsuit against the manufacturer of the video game, where I thought I was going to be on the deck shooting down zeros with Cuba Gooding Jr., and I couldn't get out of my fucking bunk. I died every time I opened, every time a door I opened, there was on fire, and then I went back in my bunk again.
I just burned to death.
I'd kill myself. Ian Edwards is out there. Oh, yeah.
Hooray for Bollywood!
All right, we'll take a quick break. Back with comedian Ian Edwards.
Hi, I'm Larry Miller, but in a way, aren't we all? What does my first beautiful kid do after graduating from high school? Fly to France. Why? I'll tell you on the next show. Listen for free through iTunes or visit LarryMillerPodcast.com. We'll see you here.
Advance Auto Parts. What else do you need to know? Their auto? Their parts? Advance Auto Parts knows the garage is it's your sanctuary. It's your church, man. You go there to free your mind, baby. Focus on what you love. Working on your wheels. Getting away from the man and occasionally the woman. Oh, yeah. Focus on something you love, like working on a car. That's nice. I do it all the time. I did it today. AdvanceAutoParts.com. Order your parts online and pick them up in store in just 30 minutes. Or have your parts shipped to your home, your office, or another location, whatever it is. They got you covered, man. Advance Auto Parts lets you get back to the garage. Go to AdvanceAutoParts.com. Go to meeting, baby. Good communications. Crucial for any business. You need to stay connected. You want to meet coworkers, clients, wherever they are. It doesn't matter. Traveling all over Timbuktu. Remember people used to say that? Walla Walla, Washington. Peoria. That's all the stuff from the cartoon. Go to meeting. Brought to you by Citrix. The proven solution for meeting and collaborating online. You can share the same screen. You can review documents, presentations in real time. Use the built-in HD video conferencing. Works like a charm. Just need a webcam. See each other face-to-face. It's effective. We use it here all the time. We use it when we talk to new clients. Start hosting your own face-to-face online meetings today. Do it from your Mac, your PC, tablet, smartphone. See why millions choose GoToMeeting. GoToMeeting, and you can try it free, 30 days free. Visit GoToMeeting.com. Do it today. Try it free. You click on the try it free button. Use the promo code Adam. So let's review. GoToMeeting.com, promo code Adam.
Help Adam Carolla save podcasting for all of us. Donate anything you can at fundanything.com/patent troll.
Well, we're back. Ian Edwards is here. Comedy debut album, 100% half-assed, available. And, you know, it's funny, I read it and it didn't make me laugh, and then I said out loud and I started laughing. And the podcast, Soccer Comic Rant. Good to see you, Ian.
Good to see you, man.
What's your story? Because I was hearing that you're from England, but also Jamaica as well, born in England. Went to Jamaica. How did you come to this?
How to become so exotic?
Yes. yes.
My parents are Jamaican, you know, so they moved to England to get, you know, just to get work, start their life before we were even born. They had us there, stayed there till I was 9. Then they decided to move back to Jamaica. We lived there for a little bit. And then, like, when I was, like, 17, they moved to New York. And then I saw that's growing up in New York.
So what were your impressions of the three places?
They're all three different places. Like, I felt at home in England because I was born there and I had cousins there. And that used to take care of us. They were older. And they lived around the corner. We used to all have parties together and have fun. And then Jamaica was just like, all right, so we got these other relatives with accents on this island that my parents used to grow up on. And we heard about Jamaica a lot, you know, as kids. And so it was just getting used to it. Like, we had no indoor plumbing.
Right.
Like, all that's gone. And we had goats and stuff in the backyard.
Why did your parents go back from England to Jamaica? If they came to England to find work, and presumably they found work, because England's super expensive, and they were there for a little while.
I think they thought they had enough money to go back to Jamaica and retire. My father, we stayed at my grandfather's crib. And with my cousins, they had two houses in the same yard. And we stayed with them till my father, he got a
in
job.
Jamaica.
In Jamaica, yeah.
In Jamaica, by the way, it's literally a crib. You all live in one crib with no plumbing.
Basically.
So you thought he could do it, but he didn't quite
sock away enough. I didn't think he could do it.
Right.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he got a good job, and but the economy, the Jamaican dollar just started. Like, I think when I went to Jamaica, it was like 2-for-1. And by the time I left, it was like at least 10. And don't even ask what it is now.
And so then you go to New York at that point.
Right.
I feel like that's a nice, you know, mixed martial arts in cultures.
Yeah.
I mean, England, New York, and Jamaica, that's a, it'll prepare you to enter the octagon of life.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
you'll
yeah.
be in good shape in almost every department.
For sure.
And so now you're in New York, and now you're growing up. And at what age do you hit New York?
17 years old.
Mm-hmm. And is it then straight on, and then it's, you know, high school,
it's high school and just, I think I got a job like mowing lawns like the second day,
because mm-hmm.
I wanted to just make some money.
Right.
And bought a bike, started riding around.
And when does comedy creep in?
It's like after high school, started college, and I was working at the Burger King, and I started just tapping into my funny side, because you have to learn how to communicate with people. And I realized that there's this one guy at the job, he was funny as hell, and everybody used to talk to him or hang out on his side of the boiler. Even if they had shit to do over here, mm-hmm. they're like over here by Greg, just hanging out, laughing. I was like, this guy's funny.
Yeah.
I was like, okay, I see what you have to do. And then I was just like, started tapping into my funny side. Steal some of Greg's audience.
I got a question.
To your side of the brother?
Yeah, to my side of the brother, exactly.
I worked at McDonald's. I feel like everyone just goes, oh yeah, I worked at McDonald's just to get a little shit. Everyone wants some shit job street cred. Mm-hmm. Like no one wants to go, oh, my dad was a really successful attorney and I used to do summers doing filing at his place. And everyone goes, oh, big whoop, Lord Fauntleroy. But you go, I flip burgers. Like, I know what it's like. But everyone says McDonald's, but there has to be, you know, well, half as many Burger Kings as there are McDonald's. There's certainly a shitload of Wendy's and Burger Kings and Carl's Jr. How come everyone says McDonald's? Everyone worked at McDonald's and no one worked at Carl's Jr.? I mean, you're the only guy who's had the intestinal fortitude,
the pride
to come in here and say you work for the king. Yeah.
I don't even think the king works for the king anymore.
I think it's better, though. Like, if you're going to bullshit about your fast food past, say Burger King, because everyone just says McDonald's, and everyone thinks you're bullshitting, I think. So how long did you work for the king?
If you really did.
If I really did. Hilarious. I'm like Rick Ross now. I'm lying to you. I'm saying I'm a drug lord, and I'm a rapper now.
I like Rick Ross because his shirt's always off, and he's fat. And I just like a guy who's... Sure, it's like you getting a big zit on your forehead, and you take a Sharpie and you draw a circle around it.
And an arrow pointing to it.
Yeah, that's you. Like, shirt, and he's tat. He's,
that's like fun for you, but not for anybody else.
But then he's got this tattoo going all over his entire body, right?
As if that's going to make him slim. No, Rick.
No, I know, but I like it. Can I say this?
Mm-hmm.
And I mean this with great respect to your
Uh-oh.
Culture. I like black guys with a tattoo because it's not so in my face. When a white dude does it, it pops too much. And I'm almost, it's like someone hitting you with a flashlight in a dark room. You know what I mean? This is this is more muted. It's a little more subtle.
He's offended.
No.
As a white guy.
When a really light-skinned white guy has a really, like a bright parrot or something, they literally force you to go, like, stare at my upper arm or my side rib cage or something. LeBron James is covered with tattoos, but it's never exploding. The other guy he plays with looks like a fucking macaw.
The Birdman.
I'm forced to stare at his tattoos, and I have to try to translate them and figure them out and figure what their meaning is, whereas LeBron just has them. Rick Ross just...
Yeah. Be tastefully understated, like Rick Ross.
I just feel bad for the tattoo artist that had to, like, touch that body.
Yeah, there is a part where, like... I need to finish the Statue of Liberty, so I have to lift one of your titties, Mr. Ross. I use a shoelace, and what I'll ask you to do is go ahead and hold it up for me and move your titty out of the way so I can finish the crown of the Statue of Liberty. Yeah, the Birdman, yeah, it's too much.
It's too much?
I'm just saying the brothers, it's muted. It's not in your face, you know,
like
neon.
I get it, but...
Yeah, the white guys are a Nagel painting. They're too much. Too
careful
much.
With that Nagel.
So it's like Michael Mann produced it or something.
Michael Mann.
So all right. So, sorry. Where were we? Oh, yeah.
You were asking him how long he worked at Burger King.
Burger King and tattoos.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Burger King.
I can't remember how long. It was probably too long.
Mm-hmm. And that's a good, fair answer.
It was probably too long, yeah. Like, I got comfortable.
And Oh, no.
I did two shifts there.
It's weird, but you, ironically, you got to be hungry. Like, you have to, all shitty jobs have to sting a little bit because your mode has to be, I got to get the fuck out of here all the time while you're there.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, you'll settle in, and if you settle in, you're screwed.
Yeah, I settled in. We was having some fun.
And what'd you do?
It was an easy job. It was just, you know, there was a, you ever been to Long Island?
Yes.
Like East Meadow, Burger King.
I've not been to that particular one, but I am planning.
You're planning on
going.
Well, back then they used to overcharge the customers,
mm-hmm.
like at night on the drive-thru, like a dollar. Or
it's a pretty decent racket because a lot of people are driving through, ordering a lot of fast food mm-hmm. after midnight or 10 o'clock at night. Got a nice buzz on.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, they would pay twice the price and blow you if you really laid it out to them. Like when you're fucking buzzed and you want to get your junk food on,
it seems like a good idea to do that.
And then you have four guys in the car, and you do the thing where it's like 7 curly fries, 7 BK broilers, 9 fish. Not the deep fried ones, not the cod yep. ones. And then all you got to do is what the fuck's the difference between 21.87 and 24.44
yep.
to them? They're
last
never
time
gonna...
7 of us came through drunk, it was 21.87.
and ordered the exact yeah. same thing. Yeah, there's no way anyone's going to do that fucking math, right?
Nobody's doing that math that night, at night, drunk at all.
So what would kind of the policy be? I mean, the unofficial policy for you guys?
Well, I used to, at the night shift, I wasn't working. I was like, I'd do the night portering. But mm-hmm. the people that did the drive through, they used to take the money and buy cocaine with it. It was hilarious.
So.
Until they got caught.
So it's basically charge everyone who comes through here an extra $2, $3.
It was a cocaine tax.
Right. And then at the end of the night, what would those guys walk with?
I don't know. I wasn't really a part of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
but you seem to know an awful lot about something you weren't a part of.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, what does a night porter do?
Clean the broiler, mop the
your stage,
the living room, and all that.
Did you ever get to work the register?
Yeah, I did register.
Oh, see, they wouldn't let me do that. Now all I did was grill.
And all you did was grill?
I worked the grill. I don't know. It's a weird thing, but I got sized up. Like I think I was literally sized up. Like I was a guy and I was big, and they were like, "You get behind the grill," and then I would do sweeps and mops of the dining area.
That's what I did at night. Yeah,
you go around and sweep everything out, and then you mop everything, and it's kind of humiliating when you do the. Could you move the feet? Move, which I feel like I did a ton of as a kid, and I don't do anymore. Move your feet.
Yeah,
I guess
it's not about a moving of.
It's not a good sign when you're eating somewhere where you have to move your feet, like.
Or it's also not a good sign when you're eating somewhere and you can smell cleanser at the same time.
Yes, that's a good point.
And I got so used to it that wasn't weird to me.
I liked that the best deal was when someone would order a bunch of filet of fish and it would stay longer than 2 hours under the heat lamp, and then they would have to throw it away. And I would always volunteer for that detail. Because I would just shove those things in my face like a pelican by the dumpsters fast as I could.
We used to just make all kinds of sandwiches. Like, we got bored with the regular menu, so we'd put, like, just a chicken patty with a fish patty with a burger patty and cheese. Or if they had specials where they made, like, shrimp. Mm-hmm. You know how they have those promotions where they try it? We just mix up everything. Like, I'm surprised I'm not dead the amount of bad junk I ate.
How did you get away with it? Because I feel like there needs to be a warden in that situation. Like, we had a guy named Ken who just, like, because you said you're hiring essentially 15-year-olds and then unemployable people essentially to work their first job.
Cream of the
and
crop.
They're willing to do, they'll do anything. I took a piss in the freezer, for Christ's sake.
We used to wrestle in the freezer.
Well, there you go.
We used to have, like,
Adam's piss?
WWE matches in the freezer.
That's what I'm saying. Like, there needs to be a fucking warden who's walking around there.
The warden used to eat with us.
Oh, okay. That's when you got it made.
Yeah.
Not Ken. He did not go for any of my tomfoolery whatsoever. I remember one time, I didn't even know how to mop. Like, when he was telling me to mop, he said, give me a sweep and a mop. And he said, I'm going to watch you mop.
Watch you.
He would watch me mop. And they had this horrible policy, which is you had to wear leather-soled shoes. And the reason you had to wear leather-soled shoes is because they didn't want to see you in your funky, fucked-up tennis shoes. Mm. They wanted to see you in a shoe that looked like a dress shoe for their, you know, very glamorous, brown Dacron gi they gave me. But their idea was you should be wearing dressy shoes and not shitty tennis shoes, and so you must wear leather-soled shoes. That was the policy.
Right.
And I only had one pair of leather-soled shoes because I didn't have dress shoes. And they were the shoes I wore in my ninth grade graduation, which were just like old man suit shoes, like brown shoes.
So you wore suit shoes?
Tie up. I wore suit shoes that I didn't fit into because this was a year and a half later, and when you're, you know, a boy, your shoe from age 15 to like 16 and a half changes quite a bit. So I wasn't going to go buy leather shoes to work at the shitty McDonald's. So I stuffed myself into these leather-soled shoes that never really were broken in or anything because I just wore them one time for my graduation. And then when I was mopping, I was going backwards. I was mopping in front of me and then walking on the wet part. And then I was sliding all over the place trying to hang on to the mop to hold myself up like a king. You have a shoe policy at the King?
I think it was like, I think I wore like black sneaker, like with rubber. I think they minded like a rubber sole so he wouldn't slip.
Yeah, they should have had that at the McDonald's in Studio City. So anyway, more about me and fast food.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you get out of Burger King.
Right.
You start hitting open mics.
Start hitting open mics and go to Governor's Comedy Club in Long Island. And checked it out a few times. And saw some open mics, said, all right, I can do this, and then invited some people down. And before that, I was, like, in my conversations, I would try some of the jokes. Mm-hmm. And if something worked, I'd kind of write it down and say, okay, and I have the lineup. And I went to the open mic, a bunch of people were there. And when you're at the open mic, you're watching the show. Now I'm on the stage and the lights hit me, I was completely blinded, like, and I lost my, I couldn't
see
anything.
It's like me looking at a white guy's tattoo.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly like
that. Now you know how it feels.
Yeah, I know how it feels now. Mm-hmm. I get you now. You know what?
You feel me? You see what I'm saying?
I feel your plight.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's your feeling in this room.
Yeah, it's a healing, like healing.
So
healing.
You must be able to do like a crazy Jamaican and English accent, right? I don't mean to put you on the spot, but.
No, it's just kind of lost. It's kind of gone.
But can't you think back on what your grandma sounded like in Jamaica kind of thing?
My dead grandma, Adam. Really, you want me to think about her?
I just think everyone does when they can't do accents until they mimic their grandma from the old country or from wherever, and then all of a sudden they slide right into that.
You ever see I'm the worst accent person. Like, if I do an impression, it just sounds like me.
Yeah, I'm horrible too, but I feel like if I spent a decade in England and a decade in Jamaica, I'd have something. You know, I don't mean to put you on the spot again. Because your accent does sound, or your...
Something's in there, right?
There's a little bit of something, but I don't know if I could tell you what it was.
Right. All the places are in there. But,
right.
But, like, I've tried to fool around with people on the phone. They're like, Ian, we know it's you.
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean?
Like, yeah.
It just takes any desire away to mm-hmm. pretend to do another voice. All I got is this one.
Well, look, it works. Don't get me wrong, Ian.
I'm not mad at it.
I just have
to accept it at some point.
No, I've accepted it, and I've moved on with my my audible life. I figured, mm-hmm. since it seems like every comic just sort of draws on their shit,
right.
I pictured you up on stage sliding into a Jamaican accent.
When I first started,
where I was. Yeah, yeah. I was in my mind with you back at the governor's place.
Yeah, when I first started, and especially I was doing the black clubs in New York, I'd do some Jamaican accent stuff.
Same thing
black people knew Jamaican. Same thing you do.
Well, I'm doing the black clubs. You do the Jamaican bit. Everyone knows.
Audience.
You got to know your audience.
Yeah.
That's right. And going to the English bit when I play the white clubs.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm. You got to give them what they want. All right, should we do a little news? Ian, by the way, Comedy Store in Hollywood, that's coming up tonight and tomorrow. Then also, is it the Shubas Theater in Chicago?
Yeah, yeah.
I don't think I've ever been there. June 20th, so that's coming up as well. Also, yes, A&E, baby, Emmys coming up. Emmy season, it's here.
On top of us already?
It's time. Yes.
Feels like it's barely been a year.
I thought they had the Emmys already. That's
no.
how.
Well, they did, technically, but they're having them again. They never stop having those Emmys, and our friends over at A&E want to remind you that, you know, you guys who are listening, who are voters out there, the deadline is June 20th. Now, I'll be at the Shubas Theater in Chicago. So I won't be there, you know, just cheering Ian on. But
doing Jamaican voices.
You guys,
from the audience.
You guys that are eligible to vote, you may want to consider season 2 of Bates Motel. I've been watching this thing. They gave me the whole box set. It's really well done. An outstanding drama series. And the lead actor is Freddie Highmore. And who else is in this thing? And it's really...
Vera Farmiga.
Oh, yeah. Right. Thank you. Vera Farmiga's in there, right? Lead actress in a drama. Outstanding lead actress in a drama. An outstanding lead actor in a drama as well. Really just incredibly done. Incredibly well executed, shot, the whole thing. So you guys doing a little voting. Show a little love for A&E and Bates Motel Season 2. All right, let's do a little news, shall we?
The news with Allison Rosen.
She'll read some news from her iPad. Sometimes it's good, sometimes it's bad. It's Allison, Allison. And when it's time to wrap it up, she'll sign it off with Zip It Cut. It's Allison, Allison.
Okay, so remember recently we were talking about a woman who celebrated her 100th birthday, and what she wanted to do to celebrate was
mow
some yard
lawn.
Work and yeah. smell fresh cut grass. And you're like, you have to want to do more than that.
I do, but I'm also curious if she has a great granddaughter. Because I like the cut of her jib. You know what I mean? Like, all I want to do to celebrate is, you know, make my man a pot roast or mow the lawn. Trim a hedge. You know what I'm saying?
Right. We'll find out if she has some legacy that you can...
tap into. Understood.
So to speak. Mm-hmm. Well, so anyway, former President George Bush, 90th birthday, and celebrated it by doing a tandem parachute jump.
What?
Yeah. He was fulfilling a goal he made 5 years ago after a similar jump, even though he can no longer use his legs.
This thing, again, where you are essentially...
someone's
a
backpack.
Very old fanny pack for a professional skydiver is not there. You've removed all of the elements of skydiving that we respect. You're essentially, you know, it's like when you see the squirrel water skiing, it sounds good, and then you realize when he's just duct taped to a piece of wood that's being dragged behind a boat, and all of a sudden it's not a squirrel water skiing anymore, and
it's just dragging a squirrel.
You're devastated. You know that feeling.
Most of my fifth grade was spent crying over
the insane disappointment.
Crestfallen.
I like how he looks like he's still in a wheelchair.
Yeah, he is in that position.
Yeah, his wheelchair position.
They like photoshopped out his wheelchair.
Wheelchair. Yeah, and put a dude behind him.
I said this. Look, I go tandem. I go with the lady behind me.
Yeah,
that's me, because that chute fails, you're just going to be fucking pinned to the ground like a tent stake with a cock through your ass, and that's how they'll find you. And they may not even ever peel you up. They may just go. They may try and go, the guy's cock is so far into the ground that we can't move him.
So we have to bury them together.
We won't even bury him. Just let see gulls and buzzards.
They're already kind of buried.
I'll make you a tourist attraction.
You are going to be horribly violated. Like, as your face is violating the pavement, your ass is going to be violated by the big dude behind you, who's probably getting some bizarre rush, some insane endorphin, adrenaline boner because the backup chute won't open.
Happy birthday, President Bush.
Well, according to a spokesman, quote, it's vintage George Bush.
Yeah, it is.
He's classic. Vintage George Bush right now.
I know. You know, I always say this. We love making fun of old people, and I think we've doubled down on it because everyone else is off limits. Pretty much. Like, you know, we used to go, Ian, sorry, we used to go after the blacks and the Mexicans. Gays
not,
are off
limit
now.
Not offended at all when you said the blacks.
Sorry, thank you.
Did you think he didn't know
I'm just,
he's black?
I'm just making, I'm laying it out, saying everybody used to be Pollock jokes coming out of everyone's ass.
Yeah.
And it's come to a more enlightened place now where it's like, you can't, no more of these jokes. No more of those jokes. No more of this and no more of that.
Pollock jokes weren't mean-spirited, though.
That's what I'm telling you, black people. I mean, well, when we do our black jokes, that's what we're saying. It's coming from a place of love. I got this chainsaw one. You're going to love it. The point is this.
Justin Bieber.
All right, the point is this. We have nobody left to make fun of but old people, except for here's the part where the strategy's horrible. We're all going to get old, whereas we would never become Puerto Rican. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm never going to become a woman. I'm never going to become Polish. I'm never going to become Puerto Rican. But I am going to get old.
I'm never going to be Helen Keller or a dead baby.
Right.
Some of my favorites.
That's right.
I mean, we all have a shot to be handicapped.
I guess we have a shot.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Again, I feel like everybody's we all have a certain amount in our, like, make fun of tank, like our joke tank.
Mm-hmm.
And so it used to be a lot of gay stuff and retard stuff, right, and whatever ethnicity stuff. And everyone has basically said no more of that. And there's no more of that, but we funneled a lot of that toward old.
Maybe that's actually why it's okay for us to make fun of old people, is because
we're
all
going
of us
to be
old.
It?
Yeah.
Ooh.
We're not actually singling anyone out.
I'm making fun of me in the future.
Future me.
I should try that the next time the gays get on me.
Yes, say you're planning.
I'm thinking about sucking cock.
Oh, for sure, someday.
Someday. I mean, don't say anything now. We'll wait till the boy gets a little older, then we'll lay it on him. You know what I mean?
That would work.
It's going to be great.
Maybe try it.
Yeah, it'd be funny because my son will be like 19 and go, like, Dad, I want to talk to you about something. I want to talk to you about something.
Okay, I doubt it's the same thing.
Oh, I don't know.
Okay, on three. One.
Two.
Three.
I'm gay. And I want to go skydiving. And I don't want the chute open.
That is remarkably close to what I was going to say.
That would be funny if every dad's policy or every parent's policy is, if their kid comes out, they come out immediately to the kid. I like that policy. Good, because your mother and I want to talk to you. She's a lesbian. I'm gay.
That's funny. You see the kid sit down. This is devastating. How could you two?
Yeah.
This is disgusting.
You know, the Abramowitz, the nice couple from down the street, it's much more than just a friendly relationship we have with them.
This is the modern version of you can't fire me, I quit.
Yes, I like that. All right, yeah, there's a chance. Yeah, I don't know if we can make that argument with the gay, but I like it. I like that argument. But yes, I think you're right. Since we're all going to get old, God willing,
hopefully,
then technically we can make fun of old people. Okay.
So our goal is to get in the demo that people make fun of the most right now.
I think we all understand, yes, that's what we should pray for. And we all know that whatever you are, you're allowed to make fun of yourself. Whatever your color, proclivity, whatever it is, you're allowed to do it. It's weird. We just do it. Like, we just go, like, you watch Bill Maher, like, Dan Savage will go, I'm allowed to say fag, but you can't say fag. And everyone just claps. Mm-hmm. It's weird because, like, if it's bad, it's bad. And it should just be bad or not. But either way, you can do what you do. If you are, and as long as we're all going to get old, then we can get old. We make fun of old people.
I had a thought recently, which was, I don't think white people should be allowed to decide what's racist anymore.
I don't like that either.
In either way. I feel like it's up to the offended group to decide.
I like that. Yeah. No, yes. Or, so,
what I'm saying is, if someone says something offensive, but the group that it's targeted toward doesn't feel offended by it,
a lot.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Most of the things that white people get in trouble for saying about black people, it didn't even make me flinch. And even going back to Jimmy the Greek.
Right.
Like, I was like, what's the problem with that?
Yeah. I think he was, well, there was two I was confused, Al Campanis and Jimmy the Greek.
Jimmy the Greek said
they have like too much muscle mass to swim or something like that.
No, they were just like, they were bred to be stronger.
Bred
to be stronger.
It's kind of true.
Which was a historical fact.
Yeah, it's kind of true.
And so I don't understand why he was fired. I didn't understand Imus.
Mm. Well, also, when you when you see, I'm trying to think of, you know, when you see LeBron dunking on Steve Nash, you kind of go, maybe there's something there. But, yeah, I wish I was fucking bred to do something other than nap and beat off. I wish I had some fucking decent genes. Look at my pussy dad. I mean, it would be nice.
Well, make fun of your dad now. He's old.
He is old. Hey, fuck you, old man.
Old man.
Old pussy. I wish someone had bred you so I'd have some fucking biceps,
yeah,
you asshole.
Yeah, dad, take that shit.
Yeah, man. No, yeah. So there was, Jimmy the Greek.
Don Imus. He said nappy-headed hoes.
Oh, yeah. Well, Jimmy the Greek was a guy who was a sports book parlayer, like a guy, a prognosticator, you know. He'd say, you know, take the Redskins and give the points or whatever, and wore a chain outside of his collar and tie. So I don't know if he spoke for all of white America. Like, it's weird when that guy's not allowed to make an ass of himself. A guy probably grew up hustling on the streets and basically shaving points or something.
Did some illegal activity here and there, dabbled.
He's got it. The is his middle name. Yeah, sorry. All right.
So a substance abuse counselor was sentenced to 55 years to life in prison for hitting a pedestrian with her car and then driving through an L.A. suburb with the man dying on her windshield.
Oh.
There's so much to enjoy about this sad story, namely being that she was a substance abuse counselor.
Was that the person we heard about a year ago or something? I mean, wasn't there this story where somebody's driving around with someone on their windshield?
It happened in November of 2012, so you probably did hear about it.
Yeah.
But she was just sentenced.
If that happened to you, would you go for the wiper spray at some point?
It's so rude to the other motorists if you do it, though.
It's true, because she always shoots over the body and onto the
nice
windshield
mist
behind you.
Something
which
I never realized. I used to just do that willy-nilly until I started hearing people bitch about it. And I was like, oh, am I being super rude by doing that?
If it's done at freeway speeds, it tends to carry at least 80 or 100 feet. Yeah. When the car's behind you going the same speed, it always gets on you. But
there's
yeah
a nice in-between tension, too, you can try and get where it just sprays your windshield.
Mm-hmm.
You
know,
so I mean, her blood alcohol was nearly twice the legal limit, and she drove 2 miles through Torrance before other motorists swarmed her car at a traffic light and kept her there until police arrived. And the man she hit, 31-year-old Philip Moreno, was taken to a hospital where he died.
Those are some brave motorists. Like, she's already got a man on her hood.
That's
and
right.
They, like, jump in front of a car. Like, don't you see she doesn't give a fuck?
She's sending a message.
One
could hear
pedestrian
the argument
on the hood of the car.
I could hear the argument. Maybe she got it out of her system. Yes. It really is true. Like, she is saying, do not get in front of this fucking Buick.
This is the last guy that tried to get me to stop when I had the last guy before him on my hood.
Right. This isn't the first guy I've had on my windshield tonight.
Yeah.
There were another group of irate motorists who surround me. This is
one of them. Yeah.
Yeah.
She was a drug addict before she became a drug and alcohol counselor, and she said that she wasn't, this was her, she contended that she wasn't drunk that night. She claimed she was self-medicating while waiting for knee replacement surgery and had consumed 3 single-serving bottles of vodka and a can of Budweiser and a Clamato before starting to drive.
See, when I hear Clamato, I think guilty.
Clamato?
Well, you say. I just, that's the part. I'm all right with the booze and the windshield it's the Clamato.
Yeah.
She's got to be locked up for that.
She was very apologetic and remorseful in court.
Oh, that's good. And the guy, how do you stay on a windshield for that?
She must not have been going that fast, or he must have been impaled. I don't.
Every single time in every movie when somebody gets hit by a car and then rolls off, they always roll off and they roll on the ground and then they cover their face real quick with their other arm. It's because it's the stuntman and they don't want to show. They always land in a way that has their elbow go over their face. Like they land on, they roll and they land on the face and do a weird face cover thing. Like chicks with really bad teeth who laugh, who hold their hand in front of their mouth when they laugh. But, all right, now what do you want to do with her? Because there's a part of me that's like, I don't know. Is she going to do it again? Her knee's fucked up.
I think you're getting caught up in the way she's dressed in court. I don't think that's her.
I think
if you saw her in her regular clothes, you'd be like, put her away. But this is like a respectable mom. Like, I don't know who her lawyer was, but they did tell her at least to dress
She's got
sympathetically.
Yeah, she's got a pink wheelchair, which I think I'm responding to, or at least it's got pink
it looks like
accents
a wheelchair.
On it.
Pink trim.
Yeah.
It looks like she was on the hood of her own car with the wheelchair. Like, you feel something for her.
I just came up with an invention. It's kind of a dickie for chairs, you know. It's not like not like a full
nice.
Turtleneck,
but a mock,
the top
mock
of
handles.
Top of every chair you have should just have grips and handle, like Bill. So every picture you take sitting down goes, oh, he's confined to a wheelchair. Like every picture, you get a lot of sympathy that way. You know what I mean? And you know, you don't want to drag around a bulky wheelchair everywhere, but the little aluminum handle, anodized with the grips on there, all you need is the top 6 inches. And they just clip on to any seat, you know, slide in, clamped on, you know.
Computer chair. That's brilliant.
Probably getting some extra sympathy at work, you know. Hey, boss, I got to leave early, you know, the chair and all. And then you walk out to your car.
You know what? You slap Man Gray on the back of that, we sell that
shit. We sell that shit. Yeah.
Right. So the judge did say that Ms. Wilkins is not what we normally see. She's not a classic violent criminal, but you have to evaluate her history. She had an insatiable desire to become intoxicated.
Uh-huh. All right.
So I don't know. I mean, she will sit in jail or prison for a really long time.
Anyway, it's weird. See, for me, everything is motivation. When I see that somebody, you know, stalked somebody, waited for them, sprung out and stabbed them 28 times or something, I'm like, fucking put that guy to death. When somebody did something, same, either way, we've got a corpse on our hands. In this case, one's intentional, one's not intentional, and that's everything to me. And I know I'd make a horrible judge for that reason, but it's like people that do shit by mistake and probably feel worse about it than you could ever make them feel by sitting in jail.
I think the part that really bothered the jurors was that she did a hit and run and kept driving with him on the hood. And then also her lawyer thinks that because she was a counselor, she was held to a higher standard. That, like, the jurors couldn't really see the evidence because it was so emotionally charged.
I want to know. Sometimes it's just the sentencing. Like, he was on the hood of the car. And that's almost, like, impossible. But nobody's questioning. Like, when you read the story, it's, all right, she drove with a guy on the hood of her car. But it's not even possible for you to really be on the hood of a car for 2 miles.
I don't know.
So
like,
is it just like,
every once, you ever have this experience? It used to happen.
Dying
to me,
man on her windshield.
When I had a truck. Every blue moon, every once in a while, I would set a coffee mug down on like my step bumper, my pickup truck, and then like drive to work and then get out of the car and go, the fucking mug is still there. Oh, or like every once in a while, you put some on the roof of your car and it's magically. You're not driving to Florida, but you drive like a couple miles and it's like still there. I think you could do that with a body. Mm.
One way to find out.
That's true. All right.
Or was she going so fast that he was stuck to the windshield and that kept him
there? Or was she taking him to the hospital?
That's what I would say.
Yeah, take him to the hospital.
Every single drug counselor was an ex-junkie. And
like drugs.
Except for Drew. That's the crazy thing.
Yeah,
he never had an addiction problem. Except to work.
Young. Doing drugs is like college for drug counselors.
Yeah,
like,
it is. It's training. It's like training. vocational training for drug counselors. But I would like the one, like, super naive drug counselor that was like, I've never done, are they called speed bells or speed balls? I don't know that that's where you take the cocaine mixture with the speed mixture and you put them together. And is that, do you sniff that? Or is that something where you do, where you put it, I don't know what they call the needle is a rig?
A syringe?
Rig? Oh, yeah. Okay. Is that be something like, and I've heard you guys say tie off. Are we talking about luggage? Or what do we mean by that?
Really
I've never,
naive for a counselor.
I haven't sniffed or snorted your cocaine. I imagine it makes you feel super happy, but I haven't done it. I had an LA beer once. It's a low. It doesn't have. It has. It's not non-alcoholic, but it's not a high alcohol. I didn't finish it, but I could feel like a little bit of what I guess you guys are talking about. I haven't had a lot of bad days.
Life's been good.
Diane is I'm happily married for 22 years. We met my junior year of high school.
Do you even take it one day at a time?
Oh, no, no, no. I go months in advance.
Right.
You know, I'm thinking about stuff that's coming up this time next year.
I was born with these chips. Look, a pile of chips.
I got a pile of chips. I know some of you got a cake, which I think is awesome because I get cakes for my birthday, too, although this is a different kind of birthday. So I'm saying you should probably stop doing drugs, although I don't really know what they do. I know they make you feel great, you know, when you're feeling blue. I know, is that something that we talk or are feeling not happy?
Can I just tell you some of the things that I did on drugs?
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Counselor,
yeah.
You know, I sold my baby.
And that was a car?
No,
my dad has a 44 stepside F-100 Ford that he just calls his baby.
Well, I didn't really,
you sold your baby?
Yeah, but I didn't really have a dad either, so.
Uh-huh. Why would you sell your baby for drugs?
Because the baby didn't make me feel good and drugs did.
Was it the cocaine or was it the marijuana?
It was marijuana.
Do you would you smoke like a marijuana cigarette or would you use what they call a bong?
We'd roll the joints and put PCP and stuff in there.
I don't know, really.
You know what PCP is?
That must stand for something. Stretch a highway that runs along the Pacific Ocean.
Can I speak to your manager?
He's never been high either.
Because I want to get
he's
a bit of counsel.
He's squarer than I am.
I don't think you can help me.
Let me tell you something. I have seen my share of loss. I went to Trader Joe's once, and you know they give you the bags with the handles built in? You know, the paper ones? One of those handles broke when I was walking, and I wasn't even halfway to my car, and nothing fell out of the bag, but I still had to kind of gather it up and get out. And then I did that thing where I popped the hatch on the car, but one of the shocks that hold it up is not that good, so it closes sort of slowly. So I had to kind of put my head under there while I was putting the bag in. So I know loss.
The story of your loss.
I know heartache.
The story of your loss is making me want to do drugs. More drugs.
One of my children did not get into their school of choice. They had to go with their backup school.
Oh, they had a choice.
Oh, that was Stanford, but it was still a backup.
Oh, okay.
Well, they wanted to go to Brown, but they couldn't. They went to Stanford.
There's a college named Brown?
Yes, with no brown people in it, but it has called Brown, ironically. You sold your kid?
Yeah, but I wish I'd have known about Brown before I sold my kid for marijuana. But
all right. Yeah. Well, listen, I've never... I keep hearing about this chasing of the dragon thing. Is that an actual dragon that you guys chase, or is that just something in your head?
It's nothing like the movie, How to Train the Dragon. This is a real thing.
Okay.
Where you just can't, you know, you're just chasing this high that, you know, and it haunts you.
Well, I think you guys should be fine on your own, unsupervised for a period of time. Now, what I need somebody to do, as you can hear, I could probably use some lozenges. Could somebody run to the liquor store and just give me some lozenges, please? I'm scratchy. Thank you.
I'll do it.
Okay. Here's $700.
All right.
But make sure and come back with change.
You know what? You're the best counselor I ever had.
Now, hold on. I want the secrets, okay?
Right.
In the tin, if you could. Uh-huh. Oh, you know, let's make it $1,700. Go ahead.
Yeah.
Now, if you're not back in 3 days, I'm going to come looking for you. And scene. Thank you. The world squares drug cancer. Yeah, no, they all got it bottom out, tell you the date, explain what happened, what their drug of choice was. I like when they tell you, by the way, just get to the one you ended with, because it's always like, started just having a couple of beers after work, you know, just blowing off steam, just watching. All right, get to the part where you're fucking freebasing the coke. Would you please get to that part? It always starts. I know everyone starts off with, nobody goes, I'm going to start slamming heroin this afternoon. Right. They start off with a couple of, it didn't, and I know it didn't seem like a problem because it wasn't, and then it became
a problem.
Yeah, it's like no one starts off fat. They start off a couple Twinkie a day habit, and they work up from there.
And grow into it.
That's right. What the hell was I? All right, let's do one more story, shall we?
All right. The New York Giants, apparently, according to defensive back Prince Amakimura.
Huh?
Are you familiar with this player?
Prince Amakimura? He's from that Eddie Murphy movie?
That's right. He's very good.
He was good, right?
Yeah.
What's that? Arsenio Hall? Next play next to Arsenio Hall? Yeah. Well, no, I don't know this guy. Is he new draft? Has he just been drafted?
He's been in the league.
Oh, is it so anyway. Number 20? What's a cornerback? A running back?
Defensive back.
DB. Okay.
So anyway, he says that they have a policy that allows the team to fine a player $500 for every pound that they're overweight.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, does everyone know this?
Well, no, I know they... Well, they used to just do it for the fat guys. Like the guys who, during the off season, would get fat and they'd get slow and their knees would give out and shit. And so they wouldn't want them to get big and fat. So they give them something where it's like, look, 335. And if you go over every pound you go over, it's $500. But I don't think they used to do it with the little guys. But now they figured out that when the little guys pack on the weight, they slow down a little bit too.
Well, it's interesting because for a layperson like me, I would just think the bigger you are in football, the better.
It feels that way, but for the speed guys, especially the corners and the DBs, it's all just about how quick are you, how fast are you, and who can you hang with. It's really more of a speed game in a weird way than it is a size game, even though everyone thinks of it as a size game. It's really a speed game.
It became like a size game like last few years, like...
Well, what they figured out is, what if we take the really huge guys and make them super fast, too?
Right.
And then you started getting these guys that were 6'6", 6'7", who ran a 4'4", 4'5", 40, and had a 40-inch vertical leap. Used to be the big guys were like Alex Karras, you know, just big, husky, you know, jukebox-built guys. Now the guys are fast, and they're big. But he got fined?
No, he just was talking about it.
Oh, okay. Prosper.com. I thought the guy got fined.
That's where I thought I was going to.
If you,
why is he snitching?
If you knew in 72 hours you'd have $35,000 to cover your needs, what would you do? Pay your credit card, start a business, home improvement, go down to Burger King and just go inventing your own shrimp sandwich? Prosper.com. Low fixed rates on unsecured personal loans. No collateral required. Peer-to-peer lending, no outrageous fees, no raising interest rates. You'll never set foot in a bank. That's the part we love. Just go to prosper.com/Adam. Provide a few details. Check your rate instantly without affecting your credit score. So for a limited time, they're offering my listeners $50 off. $50. It's not off. It's an Amazon gift card when you get a loan. So you get a $50 Amazon gift card when you get a loan. Go to prosper.com/Adam Dawson.
Amazon.com is not a sponsor of this promotion. Other restrictions apply. See site for details. All personal loans are made by WebBank, a Utah chartered industrial bank. Member FDIC, equal housing lender.
All right, let's do one more.
All right. A study has come out that says that people who fill their sentences with filler phrases like you know or I mean or like aren't actually ditzy, as you would think, based on pop culture, but they're actually being conscientious. This was a study in the Journal of Language and Social Psychology who said that people who use filler words tend to be people who are more thoughtful than most. When having conversations with listeners, conscientious people use discourse markers such as I mean and you know to imply their desire to share or rephrase opinions to recipients.
I'm down with that.
I think in some cases it's just slang, and then in some it is that the person is trying to gauge how the other person is receiving it.
I still claim in the voice of authority it's to not have you respond.
Oh, it's to hold the space for them to keep talking.
It's a verbal waterboarding. Yes. When I've always said that's why cops do so much talking, because they go, sir, what I need you to do for me right now is go ahead and get out your license and registration, okay, right now. I'm also going to have to ask you to go ahead and do it, because if they pause, you'll go, hey, man, what's up? Like, what'd I do? Or I wasn't doing anything. Like, they're not interested in your side or back and forth. And that's why anytime there's security, like at the airport and everything, it's like, what I need you to do from right around is go ahead and empty your pockets, step forward, walk. They never go, what? Please tell me your thoughts on this process. Or they don't want to hear. Their whole deal is, you don't say a word. I just keep talking. And if I leave an opening, you may say something. I don't want you to say anything. I'm going to keep it filled. That's how I do interviews. Sorry.
I mean,
Ian, am I right? Right. Okay.
Yeah.
See?
How do you, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I know what you mean.
I know what you mean.
Yeah. Now, in the case of like guys like Dr. Drew, who kind of do it, he does it because he's very empathic and he's trying to like, for you. You know, those are people that.
Trying to feel for you.
Fill in the words for you.
Whatever.
I kind of like those people. Like, you know, you're like, you know, I'm feeling kind of hungry. No. Horny? No. No. And they start like throwing to that and you're like, just give me a second. I'll fucking spit it out.
I had a conversation with my dad because my dad tries to do that a long time ago where I was like, Dad, it's a conversation. It's not a guessing game. If you just wait, I will tell you where what I'm trying to say.
It's not charades.
Yeah. I find that I had it just the other day with the coffee. Like they go, I go, could you give me a coffee? Yeah. How do you like it? Black? No. But I don't like a little milk. Milk and sugar? No, just a little milk. No sugar then? Okay. Then we could streamline this
process. It doesn't have to be so difficult.
10 seconds ago, you asked me how I wanted it. Now, if you just fucking breathe, I could then spit out how I want it. But you're going to fire off 5 different combinations, and none of them are going to be how I want it. But why not?
I think people feel good when they guess right for some reason. It gives you some type of, like, low self-esteem boost. If you have some type of fake psychic talent to guess if somebody wants some sugar or cream.
But then a lot of it is just bullshit. Like when people go, how you doing? Good?
Yeah, nobody.
And you go, well, listen. Let me answer because I could have had a limb amputated earlier today. And you let me fucking say good. Say good for me.
In the history of how are you doing, 99% of the people never wanted to know how you're doing.
No. It's
just a way to say hi, really, and
it's
keep
right
it
up,
moving.
Right up there with I'd like to help. No one has ever been helped after someone would like to help them. Thus, I shall help you is never the next answer.
Thus, I shall help you.
No, the but is implied.
No, my mom is the only person I know who is such a bummer that she will not say good. Like, I'll do the... How you doing, Mom? And you just expect the doing good. How you doing? You know, you just spit it out reflexively. She'll do the pause and go, okay. And it's like, sweetie, you have to be that big a bummer. Like even on the fucking phone, like when we're just making conversation. And good. How you doing? Good. How the kids? Good. How's it going? Good.
Well, then, do you have to say what's going on after that? Like, do you have to ask about it, or can you move on?
Well, if it was you, I would ask about it. But if it's my mom, I'm so used to the tepid, I'm doing all right, that I don't even...
Might as well be good.
That's her good. Yeah, I don't even want to pursue it, but it's a fucking bummer. And I just realized there are a handful of bummer people out there who will not toss back the good. They will draw you into their bummer drum by doing the...
Bum drum.
I'm okay.
You ever try topping her bummer?
Mm. I should.
Just bumming her out.
Well,
just like
try
play I'll right. bum you out.
You want to be me?
All right.
Go ahead. So, I'll be my mom. Hello?
Say, Mom, how you doing?
I'm okay.
You too? Yeah, I'm not so great myself. So
I'm doing a little worse now that I'm hearing that you're not that good.
Yeah, but now that I hear that you're feeling worse, that I don't feel so good, I feel worse than you feel.
Adam, why do you sound like a Jamaican Englishman? Now I'm really bummed out.
See, Mom, I'm black. I told you I'm not doing
what?
So good.
Hold on. I'm black, too. Shit.
Mom,
it's not working
black?
With the gay thing.
You're gay?
I'm gay and black.
You gay and black?
Your mother and I are going to tell you something. We're black and gay.
Sit down.
She's black. I'm gay. No, I'm black. She's gay. That'd be a good moment.
Yeah.
All right. Let's bring it home.
That's the news. I'm Allison Rosen. It's a bit cunt.
That was the news with Allison Rosen.
Boxed.com. Oh, man. Love these guys. You go to Costco. You go to Sam's Club. Everything's great. But then the long lines and the giant carts and the parking. Oy, the parking. Nobody likes the parking. And then you got to get the wagon train of stuff and drag it out to the family truckster. Not with Boxed.com. You do all your wholesale shopping on your mobile device. Oh, baby, this is win-win. No membership fees free shipping for orders over $60. And look, let's face it, you don't just go buy a toothbrush. You order. That's why you go to these places. You buy in bulk and you save. It is Boxed.com. Enter the promo code Adam on the checkout screen and get 15% off your first order. So you save gas, save on membership fees, you save on your time, which is the most important commodity. It is Boxed with an ED .com. You go on your mobile device, you visit Boxed.com, enter the promo code Adam at checkout for 15% off. All right, us, Phoenix, Stand Up Live, 20th and 21st, four big shows coming up. So lots of good guests, lots of good times. Come on out, say hi. Second show added at the Gas Lamp in Long Beach. That's coming up July 19th. And if you want your President Me book cover, jacket signed, send it in. We got not Taco Bell material here. The hardcover, give it to you signed, $10. What the hell? Shipping included. Mangria's back in full effect for Father's Day, and like that there. I want to thank Steve Malenga for calling in and being such a mensch. City-journal.org. Ian Edwards, thank you so much for coming in, Ian.
Oh, my pleasure, man. My pleasure.
Really fun. Come in anytime you like.
Yeah, for sure.
And what you can do is you can go to his website, IanEdwardsComedian.com, and then you can find his album, and you can find out where he's playing, and you can find out all the dates. IanEdwardsComedian.com. So, till next time, it's Adam Carolla for Ian and Steve and Allison and Bald saying mahalo. Pow! Sandwich. Face. Boom.
For call-in times and phone topics, follow the show on Twitter at Adam Carolla Show. Follow Ace on Twitter at Adam Carolla. Come to the Brosé Tasting tonight, 6 p.m. at the Westin Lake Las Vegas with me, Mike Dawson, Chris Loxamana, and other friends from the Adam Carolla Show. Order the new book, President Me, audiobook as well. Use the Amazon link at adamcarolla.com. This is Corolla Digital.